From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 18th day of September 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market, not with Bruce Bostard, who's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company, but today, rather, with Brian Maple, who is at FC Stone in Indianapolis. And as we close out this program, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg will join us right here on the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat at 472, a settlement price down 2.25. That was actually in Kansas City. The Chicago December wheat at 457.25. Down 4.5 cents today. The March futures at 4.75 cent loss at 476.75, and the May at 489.5, down 4.5 cents. July futures 4.25 cents lower at 501.5. From the corn pit in Chicago, nearby December contract 11 cents lower on the afternoon. The March down 10.75 at 331.5. The December down 11, by the way, at 318. The May at 340.5, down 11 cents. And July at 349, down 11.25. September 357.25, 11.5 lower. And December futures 367.25, down 11.5 cents. Soy complex, November beans, $9.41. A settlement price today, finished down 12 cents. January at 9.45.25, down 11. The March at 9.46.5, down 9 cents. And the May futures at 9.43.75, down 7.75. July contract 9.44.5, down 7.5 cents. And the August soybeans, 9.39, down 6 cents for the day. Next year's November, down 14 at $9.04. October bean meal at $290, down 90 cents. October bean oil at $34.68, 13 cents higher. October live cattle futures, $85.50, down 22.5. The September feeders at $97.25, 60 cents higher on the afternoon. And the October lean hogs today settled at $50.80. They were down $1.37.5. You are listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. Crude oil futures for the day. Settlement price in the November contract at $72.94 on the afternoon. The ethanol futures at $1.61.5 and natural gas at $3.78. RBOB gasoline at $1.83.1 for the day, and the heating oil futures at about $1.82.9. Propane contract at $98.03 on its settlement price, and the gold futures at $1,009.20 on the afternoon for the settlement there. The Dow currently trading at 9,830, and the U.S. dollar for the afternoon is trading at 76.45 at this hour. The CRB index for the day at 260.01 and the Goldman Sachs at 460.81 for the afternoon. The S&P index at 1,069.27 on the afternoon. A quick look at the weather forecast for the afternoon. It says mostly clear skies. Lows will range, this evening, mostly clear skies, around 45 in the north, away from Lake Michigan to around 60 in the far south. And then tomorrow in the north and central sections, mostly sunny in the south, mostly cloudy, a chance of scattered showers. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment. He'll help us take us through a bit of what's happening in the afternoon in the agricultural futures markets. I'm located in my Mumford Hall studio with just a bit of a technical difficulty that we'll have to try to deal with as time passes. But Dave will be here in a moment with news and futures updates.
This is Dave Dickey from the studio, and joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Mike Zuzulo. He is with Global Commodity Analytics out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hi there, Dave.
Let's begin this afternoon on the hog and cattle side and clean up after the cattle on feed report and get your initial play on that.
Well, the placements were coming in. They came in around 102, Dave. Marketing's at 96. On feed for September 1, 99%. All those were pretty much neutral and in line with the estimates. No big surprises there. The trade in feeders this week tended to take a lot of premium out of the futures market. I suspect they came in leaning on the bearish side and thinking they thought that maybe this report would be a bearish report. They didn't get that, especially with the placements actually being probably the best of the three numbers. So we may be set up for some short covering in the feeders, especially next week, I would suspect.
So the question I guess I have about the hogs is that we had a nice little rally in here, and then we kind of hit a top and a double top there, so to speak, and we've backed off of it. And do you get the feeling that hogs are ready to roll over here for a little while?
I do. After this week's trade, you know, the hogs and the corn have traded very similarly here the last few weeks. And if we remember back when the August hogs were still trading and right before they went off the board, they were very, very discount, and the futures and the cash were going pretty much straight down on a variety of issues. I had thought that maybe after the August expired, we'd be able to get a short covering rally and put some premium back into the hogs, not just from a technical standpoint, but also from a cash standpoint and funds coming in and looking at the hog prices too cheap. I would have thought the exact same thing about corn and did think the same thing last week about corn after the report came out. But at some point, after you get up so high, you can take the technicals and the funds only so far, and then you start to have to get into the meat and potatoes of the fundamentals, and that means the cash market. And what looked like to happen to me today especially was after the mid-session time period, the hogs started to roll over. There were reports, several reports from Chicago, that we had fund-related selling in the hogs. And what it looked like to me all day long was the meal market was down with the corn, even with the beans up and trying to make new highs on the day. And I couldn't put that together until I realized, well, maybe this is a situation where the hogs are being traded in the corn and the meal pits. And indeed, I think that's what happened. I talked to some guys in Chicago after the close, and they did talk about fund liquidation in the corn and in the meal as well, and late in the session, some fund liquidation in the beans. And so I think to answer your question, you can get the funds and the technicals to give you so much in terms of upside if you're coming off of an extremely undervalued and inefficient market. But at some point, you've got to have the real meat and potatoes fundamentals back you up, especially on what would be today would be classified probably as our first harvest Friday.
Let's turn your attention then to the grains. We were really rooting from a hedging standpoint on a higher close today. We did not see that. What does that imply as we move into next week?
Well, the lower week in December corn is extremely disappointing, and it puts a lot of burden on the market for Sunday night and Monday trade. I'm obviously doing the midday comments here today. I did not expect this kind of a hard push down would happen in the corn, and especially given the bean strength late in the day. And given the weather, I mean, it's amazing. I've seen weather reports where places like Greenville, Mississippi, has had 10 days out of the last 11 of rains, and they've gotten almost 7 inches of rain. Louisiana, Arkansas, all three of those big, big Delta bean states have had an unbelievable amount of rains. And I thought between that forecast continuing for heavy rains in the Delta and big rains coming into the Midwest of 1.5 to 2 inches between now and next Friday on the latest precip models, that the corn trade would want to keep at least a little bit of the premium in the market going home for the weekend and maybe even find short covering. They did the exact opposite, and it really spells potential trouble if we don't reverse thrusters on Sunday night and Monday. Again, going back to the fund issue, I was trying to find out before we went on the air from my Chicago contacts whether there was one big fund or two big funds that ended up blowing chunks and went ahead and just blew out of everything. They cannot get anything back to me to confirm that. But gosh, Dave, the footprint and the way it looked, it sure looked like to me there was one or two big funds that just decided to just jump out of everything they were in terms of agriculture. So I go into this weekend very nervous now with both the technicals and the funds working against me.
And turn your attention to the same sort of analysis on the soybeans, please.
Well, they're not as bad because for the week we closed up 38 cents on the November futures, and I have to say that they made a really good try to get back up above the 200-day moving average, settling at 941 in November, 200-day moving average at 943. Given the break in the meal, I felt like the beans at least showed that they could stand up on their own a little bit, and so I'm not as nervous about the beans as I am the corn. I think that, the weather and the yield reports give us a little bit of undercurrent and support in the bean complex. I think that's where Monday-Tuesday trade, I would sure like to see us back up above 960, though, and with the corn supportive and the wheat supportive as well. I don't know how much more the Chinese are going to keep buying of our beans here at this point, because at some point I think the Chinese become kind of like an end user where they realize more beans are going to be coming on. And why would you go ahead and buy them? If they do keep buying them, however, it says to the market, the Chinese are probably worried about the supply side. They're worried about our yields, just like we're talking about here on the phone. Maybe they're going to start worrying about the Delta crop and being able to get those good yields out of the Delta with all this rain. So I think that's where beans have a lot more fundamental play to them, and whereas the corn, it's more psychological because the yields are not on your side right now as they bull, especially as you head into harvest.
Now add the basis to the mix and come out with a marketing strategy for us.
Well, bottom line, you say we held the 200-day moving average because we got within 2 pennies of it on the close. So no sales here on the beans because the cash market should turn around. The spread should narrow and firm because we have theoretically no problems with the Chinese-U.S. trade because China keeps buying our beans. We had a frost in China's bean province, number one bean provinces today. We'll find more about that out next week. That would theoretically say they're lower on supply, needing more foreign demand. And then you've got these yield issues and this weather in our own crop. You would think, and we saw this in the Gulf price. The Gulf price did jump 5 to 10 cents today in the beans, and that was nice to see. We need to see more of that. We need to see the interior react to that. If we do, then I would stay off the selling plan on the soybeans. If basis widens next week and we take out that 920 level, then I have to become more of a defensive guy and probably at least at the minimum do puts, maybe even sell some cash.
And what else are you looking at? The U.S. dollar continues to spiral lower.
Yeah, it does. We got good economic reports this week, Dave, pretty much across the board. And I think for the dollar to show firmness on good economic reports, it's starting to give the idea that maybe the dollar's due for some short covering. I think the close today in the S&P and the Dow futures, it's been very, very tame, and that's nice because we've got that quadruple witching day here. If we close out the S&P and the Dow pretty firm on the day and the dollar doesn't make any sharp moves higher, then the outside markets we go into next week is very supportive.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He is in Lafayette, Indiana.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net. Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Todd Gleason in my Mumford Hall studios. Dave Dickey is at WILO. Thanks to him for filling in on short notice there. We did solve our technical difficulties, so I should be with you for the rest of this afternoon as we make our way through the closing market report.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
Speaking of Dave Dickey, he'll be here in just a moment to take us through all the agricultural news for the afternoon. Of course, you are listening to WILL and Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I.
In agricultural news, the Senate Judiciary Committee has scheduled a field hearing Saturday in Vermont to give Chairman Pat Leahy the opportunity to examine antitrust issues in the dairy industry. Among the witnesses are Christine Varney, who is Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust Issues at the Justice Department, and Joe Glauber, Chief Economist at USDA. The two departments, Justice and Agriculture, earlier said they plan to hold a series of joint workshops to look into buyer power and vertical integration of agricultural production and to discuss potentially anti-competitive conduct. Bankrupt U.S. chicken producer Pilgrim's Pride Corporation filed a reorganization plan with a Texas court late on Thursday. In the filing, the company says it expects to have at least $1.65 billion of financing and that JBS will buy the majority of stock of the reorganized company's stock. Pilgrim's Pride said on Wednesday that JBS would acquire a 64% stake in a reorganized company for $800 million. The company said it intended to list the reorganized company's stock on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. Pilgrim's Pride filed for bankruptcy in late 2008, pressured by high feed and fuel prices. Intercontinental Exchange called for the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to set new position limits in commodity exchanges, rejecting the stance of industry associations as well as its biggest competitor, CME Group, which has proposed its own position limits. In a statement on Thursday to a House Agriculture Committee, Atlanta-based ICE said CFTC should set and enforce aggregate position limits across commodity trading platforms, including exchanges, and should have sole authority to grant hedging exemptions to those limits. Analytical firm Informa Economics expects the government to lower its forecast for the 2009 U.S. wheat crop in its small grains summary issued at month's end. Informa projected 2009 U.S. wheat output at 2.154 billion bushels, compared with USDA's current forecast for 2.184 billion to reflect fewer harvested acres. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. You can hear that second show anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll record this afternoon at 4:30, posted by 6 o'clock this evening on a Friday to our website. And you can listen to it after that at willag.org. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural futures markets. Now up next, it's National Farm Safety Week. We'll have a story on why you should be safe during the harvest season. Last year, there were some 120,000 farm-related injuries around the nation. Most of the time, these injuries involved machinery. Usually a hand, an arm, a foot, or a leg was caught up in a fast-moving tool. A University of Illinois Extension farm safety specialist, Baba Heron, says it's a common accident and one where it is best to leave the victim in place and wait for the first responders.
A lot of our extremity injuries, to the hands, arms, and legs that get caught in a piece of equipment or whatever. Normally, just from what happens, a person gets entangled in equipment, and from a first aid standpoint, if somebody comes on the scene, the mistake they often make is try to pull them out. They want to shut the equipment off, of course, if it isn't shut off, but often they should leave the victim in the machine unless there's some danger or fire or whatever, so that if and call for help for an emergency crew to come out that has training to deal with a person who's in that situation.
Once the victim's freed, Aharon says they can quickly lose blood and go into shock. It's important for the first person on the scene to shut down and stabilize the equipment, call an emergency crew, and then wait for them to make a decision about how to best proceed with the extraction.
Another issue on farms this time of year is children. We have a number of injuries with children because they come home from school, for example, or on weekends, and they want to be out where the excitement is, particularly boys, our research shows. And so they want to get out and they want to play, they want to be on the equipment, riding on the equipment. It all looks very exciting to them. But we need to realize that allowing children to ride on our equipment is putting them at significant risk because they can easily be thrown off the equipment because most of our equipment doesn't have any shock absorption in it, like a tractor, except in the operator.
I can barely hear you now, Todd.
And wagons and so on and so forth are very little. And it's very easy for them to be thrown off the equipment and be run over by the machine before we can stop it.
The lateness of the harvest season this year has a Heron particularly concerned about farm kids. He has no doubt the pressure to bring in the crop will cause moms and dads to ask too much of their offspring too soon.
This year it could happen where we're getting a rush to get things done, and we start having our younger children, say they're 10, 11, 12-year-olds, operating tractors and doing different things in field work or moving wagons on roads or whatever it might be. They are very much at risk to accidents because One example is that they have very significant limitations. They may look like an adult and act to some degree like an adult, but they have one limitation is simultaneous motor skills. Where you have to move, if something goes wrong with the tractor, for example, it goes down in a ditch or whatever, and you've got to turn the steering wheel one direction, push in on the clutch with your foot, and maybe take an implement out of the field with a hydraulic system. You got to do that all at once to get the machine under control, and we don't develop our capacity as human beings to do that very well until we're between 13 and 15 or 16 years of age.
On the subject of kids, the younger ones will play in the gravity flow wagons. It's easy to get stuck, sucked down, and suffocated as those wagons empty. Don't let it happen. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. On the line with us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of cash basis is Brian Maple of FC Stone. Good afternoon to you, Brian. Thanks for joining us on short notice today.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's talk a little bit about basis. What do you hear from the grain elevators you talk to?
Well, basis has slipped back over here in the east fairly significantly, rapidly, as we approach harvest. Basically, the processor is seeing that we're going to see a fair number of beans move in next week. We think we'll have a large number of farmers out harvesting beans by the end of next week, and that's giving them a comfort level that they're going to be able to own beans at a cheaper price level. So they backed away from starting the week at probably roughly a dollar over to a lot of facilities to where we've got several at option price. There's a few still sticking out there, some higher numbers in the northern regions, but as you approach the southern sections, we're starting to back away very quickly.
Are you suggesting to farmers that have old crop that they go ahead and move it, or should they keep it in place?
It depends on where we're at in their spot, but my feeling is you still go ahead and sell old crop beans. Just get them moved off of your books because at some point we've got a lot of beans that are going to come to the trough and it's going to force the spreads out and it's going to force the basis cheaper. So if they want to hang on to beans, they're better off putting them on a basis contract, moving that out against the, I don't know, March, May, or July of next year and carrying it against that rather than actually being setting out here long cash commodity.
Thanks
in a market.
Much, Brian. We appreciate it.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. A bank robber who managed to overcome the two officers who had been transporting him has been recaptured in suburban Chicago. While on the lam, authorities contend 39-year-old Robert Medei boldly robbed the same Bloomingdale bank he allegedly robbed before. Police in West Chicago caught Medei today after a car chase ended in a crash. A day earlier, authorities say he overpowered two lawmen, bringing him to a courthouse in Rolling Meadows for a sentencing hearing on a series of robberies. Police say he drove off in their vehicle and later carjacked another vehicle. Senate candidate Mark Kirk is feeling the heat over legislation meant to reduce global warming. Some conservatives feel betrayed because the Illinois Republican voted for cap and trade legislation in June. They have booed and insulted him for backing something they consider a hidden tax. Illinois' 10th District Congressman now says he would oppose the bill as a senator. Democrats are accusing him of flip-flopping, noting that Kirk originally said the bill would strengthen national security. They argue he has abandoned that position to win an election. Kirk says he originally supported the cap-and-trade bill because it would have little impact on a suburban Chicago congressional district. He says that as a senator, he would oppose it because it would kill jobs across the state. Purdue University says Indiana's number of farm fatalities increased for the second straight year, a trend one safety engineer calls extremely disheartening. The report by Purdue researchers says 28 Indiana residents died last year in farm accidents, up from 24 in 2007. Purdue agricultural safety engineer Gail Diaby says the increase is worrisome because farm fatalities had generally been on the decline in the state over the past three decades. He says Purdue hopes the report reminds farmers preparing for the fall harvest to operate their machinery with care and take other steps to avoid injuries. The image of a University of Illinois alumnus and distinguished professor now has a permanent mark on the wall of one of its labs. Nick Holonyak is best known for inventing the LED, or light-emitting diode, in 1962, but he holds a total of 41 patents, has received the National Medal of Technology, and is in the National Inventors Hall of Fame. Today, a plaque was unveiled in the Urbana Campus Micro and Nanotechnology Laboratory. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of three more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. On the line with us today to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here at the Illinois State Water Survey on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, Steve Hilberg. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Steve, tell me about the weather forecast for the weekend to begin with.
Well, it looks like we're going to finally see a change. We have gone through a remarkable 2 weeks of gorgeous weather throughout most of Illinois. There was some rain earlier in the period down south, but much of the area has enjoyed sunny skies and very moderate temperatures the last 2 weeks and dry weather. That will change this weekend as upper trough starts to develop over the central plains, and looks like once that happens, we're going to be in for a period of potentially wet weather for perhaps a week to 10 days, but not continuous, of course, but certainly the threat of rain. But until that time, which probably will begin around Sunday, we should have some good weather the rest of today and through most of Saturday, with the rain starting to move slowly from south to north during the day Sunday and into Sunday night.
How much precipitation will be there in the rain gauge when we get done with it?
Well, it depends on when we get done with it, but off and on, we could see some downpours. From the looks of this pattern, any showers or storms will likely be slowly moving, so they have the potential to put down half inch to an inch of rain at times. But the rain looks like it's going to be an on-off type thing, with perhaps the heaviest rain coming late on when a cold front actually starts to approach, a more heavier rain. But then the upper low is going to stay out in the west, in Kansas, Nebraska, spinning for a good part of the week. So it'll throw off waves of rain toward during that time, and maybe by the end of the week we could see an inch and a half to 2.5 inches of Illinois and Indiana, but that'd be spread out over about a 10-day period.
And is there anything that we have to worry about in the way of the really cold weather, or is it further out now?
It's further out now. The fact that this low is disconnected from the jet stream really helped us as far as this latest frost threat. It looked like the cold air was going to plunge in, but this low is disconnected, and it's going to keep the cold air north. And right now, so for the temperature, we're pushing, you know, nothing before the early normal frost date, which really runs around mid-October here throughout most of Illinois and Indiana.
All right, anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, we may, the longer we put off the frost, the more we may pick up some of those growing degree days. We're running from anywhere from 50 below in the south to 300 in the north, and the later we can put off a frost, the better we do with that. So keep our fingers crossed.
Thanks so much, Steve.
All right, Todd, have a good one.
You too. Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. He's located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. Be sure to visit willag.org today after 6 o'clock to hear our Commodity Week program.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.